Coming up on the No Ceilings NBA show, we have a very, very special episode with a potential top 10 pick in the 2026 NBA draft. That's coming up next. Welcome to the No Ceilings NBA show. My name is Corey Tullaby. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time Kim, and very special guest. We have, ladies and gentlemen, Kingston Lemmings, freshman from the Houston Cougars. So, Kingston, you're our guest. So, how we doing today, man?
Doing pretty good. Finished all my workouts. Just got back home. And after this, I'm going to go to my AAU team's practice back up at Brennan. So, yeah.
Love it. Exciting times. Albert, how are we feeling today?
Living the dream. We continue to have the best intro music on the planet, so love that one. But excited to do this interview. I know we have a lot to cover.
We do have a lot to cover because, again, we're here with the man himself, Kingston Flemmings. So, Kingston, for anybody who maybe isn't so familiar with your game, let's get it started. How would you describe your game?
I'd say someone that gets downhill, gets teammates open, able to score on three levels, you know, three ball, pull up, get to the rim. I think a good defender, but I think anything you need me to do, I'm going to do that. So anything like coach tells me to do, I'm going to do that to my best ability.
All right. So, I mean, where did the hoop dream start?
Definitely younger. I mean, I just watched my brother play a lot. So anything he did, I kind of wanted to do too. So other than baseball, track, basketball, but since then I never liked to lose. So I always just play as much as I could, and just continue to work and get to where I am right now.
You've got a whole family that's involved in basketball in some way, shape, or form. Something that I was thinking about, like, even for me, when I talk to my family members about basketball, they don't care that I do this. They all have their own opinions, and they'll tell me when they think I'm wrong. For you, you've got a really invested family in basketball. Talk to me a little bit about what it's like when you guys get together and talk about ball. Who's winning those conversations? Who's kind of leading those conversations?
To be honest, it's really just talking about ball. It's really just me, my older brother, and my dad. You know, my sister, they're good at basketball, but they don't really like talking about basketball that much. They kind of just, they just play it because they're really good, and obviously they put the work in. But I mean, it's a lot of different things, whether we're talking about anything, whether it's teams, the playoffs. We talk about a lot of different things, but I always like to say I have the best opinions, obviously, because it's my opinion. But yeah, I always like to say that.
So what was the most heated conversation or debate between you, your brother, and your dad?
Heated debate. A few years back, this is that the year after the Pistons lost, I think maybe 26 straight. I was always saying to a lot of people, I was like, I think they're good enough. They're better than that, and I think they're good enough to make the playoffs. I was explaining it to my brother and my dad, and they said I was crazy. And Coach Samp at Houston, they said I was crazy. But I mean, they end up doing that. So, I mean, that's probably one of the heated conversations we had before.
Just as a follow-up, though, what was it in that Detroit team or that roster where you were like, I feel like they have something, it's just not clicking right now?
I mean, obviously, J.B. Bickerstaff, he was a great coach at Cleveland. And then you got Cade Cunningham. You see, everyone sees what he's doing. Yeah. He's a problem for sure. But then even the players they had just around Cade, you know, it was a defensive-minded team. You know, everyone worked hard. And even in the games they lost, they're playing teams so, like, so close. You're playing the Celtics close every single time they play. So, like, they're losing these games, but it's not like they're not competing. So I knew, like, after a matter of time, Cade can get better. Team around him's going to get better. And you see what they're doing now.
With that being said, you mentioned Cade Cunningham, and he's one of the guys that I believe you kind of noted as someone that you kind of model your game after. I know you mentioned Tyrese Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox, Derrick Rose. What's something that you feel like you've kind of extracted or learned from their games that you've applied to your own, whether it's a skill set, a mentality, a spirit? What's something that you've learned from them that you've added to your own game?
Yeah, I think D. Fox, I mean, obviously how fast he plays, but he's really in control. Like, he's playing dumb fast, but he's controlled. He sees the court everywhere. Cade Cunningham, just like he plays at his own pace. So you can play, you can't just be fast the whole time. That gets people start keying in on that. So you got to play at your own pace. And the way he uses bumps, he bumps a lot in the mid-range. Obviously, he's bigger and stronger than I am. But still, when I get low, I can bump and bump a lot of people. And then Tyrese, just the way he takes care of the ball. I mean, his assist-turnover ratio was crazy when he was playing. He'll get back to that next year for sure. I mean, he's a special player. So just watching all those people and integrating it into my game.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that is so apparent when anybody watches you on the floor because you have this blazing quickness. I was at the Arkansas game in New Jersey, and I just kept looking over to the person sitting next to me and going, like, can they try something else? Like, maybe weak him? Like, I don't know. Like, he that first step, deadly. Like, and you just kept getting downhill. But then you talk about the pace that Cade can play with. When you get to that elbow, because you got the elbow jumper that is such a threat for you, you hit that little hesitation, and it really throws defenders off. And then Tyrese Haliburton, you know, the way he takes care of the ball, you've had, you know, an absolutely pristine assist-to-turnover ratio yourself this year, which, as a freshman, you know, is pretty impressive, let alone, you know, for an upperclassman. So it's so easy to see all of those elements of your game. Now, like, Derrick Rose is somebody that, you know, I hear is your favorite player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my favorite player for sure.
So what is it about his game? Because I grew up a Bulls fan. You know, so those were some of my favorite years. What was it about Derrick Rose's game or his story that has influenced you?
I mean, he's a killer. You see anytime he's on the court, I mean, he's killing. I mean, with the Bulls, like, youngest MVP. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been a problem. With the Bulls, he just completely changed that organization. You know, Chicago was on a uproar when he was there. So I think, I mean, I always wore number one because of D-Rose. I had his shoes when he played. Obviously, this year I couldn't get number one. But if I could have, I would have wore it. So, but I always wore his shoe. I think just how fast he plays and just that, to his aggression. He doesn't play any games off. Every single game you see him playing, he's going out there to kill and get the win. So I really appreciate that as a player.
Derrick Rose, to your point, an absolute killer, played with so much speed, power, balance, all that stuff. Something that someone recently said to me, or maybe this was a couple years back, but they were like, if you can't explain why something's good within like a sentence, then it's probably not good. But I feel like that's hard to do sometimes. So the way that I've been framing things when I watch players recently is I try to identify what's a player's superpower. What are they best at? Sometimes I'll watch a big and I'm like, his superpower is offensive rebounding. Another guy, it's like, oh, you know, he protects the ball. For you, Kingston, if you were to kind of solidify things or kind of break things down a little bit, what do you think your superpower would be as a basketball player, whether it's a skill set or a mindset, whatever it might be?
I think making teammates better. I think anytime someone's playing with me, whether it's off ball, on ball, on defense, I mean, they're going to enjoy playing with me. I don't think you can find a teammate who's said they didn't enjoy playing with me, they didn't like me as a player. So I think anyone I play with, they're going to enjoy it, and then just making them all better any way I can, make it easier on defense, whether it's on offense, you know, getting them open shots. You know, I just want everyone I play with to enjoy that. And, you know, basketball is a 5-on-5 game. So if you got four other players on the court that like playing with you and all five people on the court like playing together, like you see OKC, you can tell that whole team, like, they really bond, they really like playing together. And they play different on the court because of it. They're all playing for each other. But I think I'm definitely like that, like a connector as a team, and you're going to enjoy playing with me, so definitely making teammates better.
Just a really quick follow-up to that question. You just spent your freshman season at Houston, right? And we've all heard the stories, and we've seen it all in terms of how intense it could be to play for Coach Sampson. You talked about how you try to make things easier for your teammates on offense and on defense, but we know at Houston there is a big emphasis on defense. If you can, talk to us a little bit about what that was like for you coming into your freshman season there, embracing that spirit of defense and how, and some of the things that you've learned and how you feel like you've improved as a defender.
Yeah, it's definitely an adjustment. You know, I mean, just how early you have to be on a lot of rotations because of how aggressive we are. Like, definitely, even as the year got on, if I went another year, I just only get better at that. So, I mean, it was we're definitely a younger team, so our defense wasn't as good as the year prior. I mean, we were still a top five defense, but just how early you have to get there and just watching the seniors, you know, watching Milo's, watching Emmanuel, watching JoJo, Ramon, you know, seeing how good they play in the defense, how they're all there, and it's just connected. If you're not connected as a team, it becomes easy. If someone's not there at the short roll, it's 4-on-3 on the backside. So that defense is good because all five people are always connected. So just seeing that, like, obviously I've watched a lot of basketball and played a lot of basketball, so I know rotations, I know a lot of things like that. But at Houston, you got to You got to just see it before it's coming. You got to see the screen coming and know you can get there, steal that pass, can't let it get through. So I think just playing at Houston, you know, helped me just see things in a different way, a different scope than I didn't usually used to do.
Explain that defensive coverage, because it is, you know, fairly unique, and obviously it's led to a lot of success. You know, you guys are very aggressive on ball screens, getting up to the line of scrimmage. So, you know, for maybe the people who, you know, aren't super familiar with terminology, maybe like break down that defense for people who, you know, maybe didn't notice what was going on that side of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of calls, you know, right, left. But when you call, when you make a call, you got to get to their hip. And then you have back pressure. So a lot of times you see us when they're getting there, we immediately jump to eliminate the throwback pass, the hook around pass. And then JoJo, whoever our big is, JoJo's the best at it, but he gets the line of scrimmage and it's almost like a trap on ball. So when you're a point guard, I mean, it makes you, you're uncomfortable there. So the easiest outlet pass is usually the short roll. And that's why I was talking about earlier, you got to load to it early. So you got to see the screen going, because if he gets to the short roll, the whole defense is kind of done for. So you got to get there early, and then they can play the play ahead pass, but usually JoJo's there. So just playing super aggressive. And when you do that, you create turnovers. It's easier to get in transition. And then you make a point guard's life hard. You know, when you're a point guard, even if you're not getting steals, if you're getting balls deflected, that weighs on your mind, you know, when you're making passes, anything like that. So we just try to disrupt in any way we can. And that's why Houston's been, eight straight Sweet 16s. It's crazy. So hopefully they can get over the hump this year.
Following up on that, you know, talking about how aggressive you guys are, and that's apparent. You talk about JoJo being the best at it. It's because his arms crazy. Never end.
He's a problem. He's a problem.
Literally, you know, a freak in that way. How much did that prepare you for what you were going to see on the court practicing against guys like that?
Definitely. That was one of the main reasons I kind of went there. I mean, just playing against these guys. I mean, I didn't get to play JoJo a lot in the summer because he was recovering from his foot, but still playing against E-Man, playing against Milos, Mercy, Chase. When you're playing against a defense, it's aggressive, especially watching them too. Watching Milos play, he didn't turn the ball over a lot. So that kind of helped me as the year went on. When I first got there in the summer, I'm turning the ball over a lot. Obviously, I'm doing good on offense, anything that happened. I just have a lot of turnovers, unforced. So When you're playing a defense that aggressive every single day in practice, the games are almost easy. Like when we play Iowa State, I didn't have a lot of turnovers. Like you can name a lot of the defenses, and I'm not having crazy turnovers just because of how we practice, how we play at practice. So, I mean, just playing against those guys every day just prepare me for the game for sure.
Along with the defense, we've heard so much about the conditioning. How important conditioning is to you guys at Houston and kind of the rigorous training that you guys go through to kind of get to the level that the staff there expect you guys to be. Talk to us a little bit about that process, how rigorous it was for you to kind of adjust to that and to kind of get your body right for the season that you had.
Yeah, I think high school prepared me a lot for that. I think just the running we did, it was just so continuous, you know, every day, you know, so you can't, there's no days off. The worst days were VersaClimbers. Like if someone's gotten on a VersaClimber or they had to go through one of the workouts we've done on those, because it's crazy. You can't even explain it really how it is. It's a full body workout, but it's weird. Like, I don't know, but it's crazy. I think it's just every single day how you flow from one thing to the next. So we start on the field, or depending on where we're at, we start on the field running. Then we're inside for a guard workout. Then we lift. Then we come back for a guard workout. Then we have practice. So it's just continuous. And then those days add on. So then when you get to Thursday, it's like the week's almost over. We got Thursday, and then it's VersaClimber days. So those first 3 days, you think, okay, I got over through those. And then you wake up in the morning at 4:30, and you got VersaClimbers. So, like, just going through it, it's like it takes a toll on your mind, definitely. Like, so Houston's not for the weak at all. So you definitely got to think about that. But, I mean, I think it prepared us a lot. I mean, it prepared every single team, you know, mentally tough. No game was as hard as those weeks that we had in the summer. So when we know you had those weeks, you know you've been there with your team, it just helps the team become better.
You know, we're talking about the defense and everything, but, like, you know, you also showed that you are capable of explosive scoring outbursts. You know, you had 42 against Texas Tech. Walk me through a night like that. What does that feel like when you are putting up, you know, a 40-point game in college is crazy. Like, you know, it's a 40-minute game, so you're scoring over a point a minute. Take me through what a night like that feels like.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players can probably tell you, sometimes you're just feeling it that night. I think just getting to my spots, a lot of time I just felt early in the game, or kind of in like the warm-ups, I kind of felt a little different. So I shot early in the game, I'm making, I think I had seven, our first seven or maybe our first nine, but I just felt it early in the game, and obviously Tech was frying us. So, I mean, I think they had like 50-something in the first half, and we had like 52, and they had 56. And we're holding teams to like 59 points a game. So they have 56 at halftime. Like, so I ended up scoring pretty well in the first half. I had 25, but just continuing to it, you know, getting to my spots. Pull-up was hitting, getting downhill to the rim. But also when you have players like E-Man, Milos, Mercy, Chase, and they're shooters, defense has to be honest. Are you going to help in on me, help on me getting my pull-up, getting to the rim? Or are you going to help in off Emmanuel Sharpe, and he's shooting it from 35? Like, so you're hitting him, you're hitting Milos. So just having all these players around me made it much easier for sure.
Now, you know, you talk about your pull-up, and I feel like, you know, while in the more analytical era, right, like the basic conversation is like that the mid-range is dead, but like the mid-range is not dead for scorers that are good in the mid-range. And you look at a point guard like Chris Paul, who when he came into the league was, you know, an athletic freak, but he played until he was 40 years old, so obviously he lost a lot of athleticism, but he had that elbow pull-up till the end. And I've always felt like that was a cheat code, because it forces in ball screens, you know, the big into, you know, a really tough cat and mouse game. And you talk about scoring and not being able to help up. How much does your pull up and your scoring ability help open up playmaking opportunities for your teammates?
Definitely. I think it's a mixture. Obviously analytics are to a certain point, but analytics can't really tell you how much someone's working on their game in the pull up. Can't tell you how much someone's working on that. You see Shea. I mean, Shea gets that mid range, it's automatic because he works on it so much. You saw CJ McCollum doing it, killing with the Hawks. You saw Jalen Brunson doing it, killing. So obviously a lot of teams are different, but it kind of depends on what a guy works on. So even if a guy works on a ton of threes, of course the three is going to be most efficient for him. They're working on a ton of pull-ups, is going to be most efficient. Floater is going to be most efficient. So anything you work on, it's going to be like that. So I think just being able to have a level at each level. I mean, there's three levels on the court. A lot of teams play drop. So you have that middle area, and it just keeps the defense honest. You know, if they know you're going to shoot a three or get to the rim, it's almost an area of the court they don't even have to guard. So just trying to keep them honest in any way I can. And it's an easy place to get to. So if you can work on it and you can hit it, definitely get that in your game.
You talk about work and the type of work that you've been putting in. And you know, we've done a lot of these interviews. And a lot of times when we talk about the amount of work that you guys are putting in to prepare for games, for scenarios, for all that stuff, a big point of emphasis that we've heard a lot is film. Talk to us a little bit about how important you being a film junkie, you caring about film, watching film, how much that's impacted your game and how much that's a part of kind of your calculus as you prepare, as you were preparing week in, week out in college, but also preparing for the NBA game.
Yeah, it helps a lot. I mean, we watched a lot of film in high school too. So like just carrying that on to college, but it helps having the coaches we had. You know, they were so keyed in on the scout. They were so locked in on their job that when we go into scout, they have such an in-detailed scout. Some of the stuff you watch, you just watch on your own. So they have such a detailed scout. As long as we follow that to a T and do that, it was a good job. But I think that scout was mainly for them on offense. We also did some scouting on them on defense. But when I'm watching, I think I just watch how people defend, you know, how they're playing coverages, because every big plays differently. Yep. Even if the whole team's in drop, some people are more aggressive with the drop. They get lower. Some people are a little higher. So just watching that and knowing tendencies of teams, because at the end of the day, a team starts with a game plan, but as the game goes on, they're going to fall back to their tendencies. So just watching as much as I can, learning what all these players do, and then having coaches like that. So obviously, get to the next level, maybe I won't have coaches like Houston. But at Houston, I had them. I've been blessed to have them so far. So I'm glad for that for sure.
Now, this is considered, you know, one of the best drafts maybe of all time, but also if you niche it down a little bit more, the talent at the point guard spot is absolutely crazy, loaded with guys. Now, you know, Erica told us that, you know, your favorite quote might be comparison is the thief of joy, but was there like in your mind at all kind of like a friendly competition where, you know, you see Mikal go for 45 and you see Acuff go for 40 and then you're going for 40. Like, did that motivate you at all when you're seeing these other guys kill?
I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, when you see anyone across, I think like AJ killed one day at 42. I think Keaton Wagler had 46 one day. But when you're seeing all these people, all these freshmen your age hooping like that, obviously you want to hoop and get the win. So at the end of the day, every single game I go into, I'm trying to win. But obviously, seeing the players around me, knowing the class I'm in, I mean, I played against these guys in high school, so I knew the players that they were. I figured that we would be a pretty good class. Obviously, I mean, we obviously had to show on the next level. College is one thing. So, I mean, but just knowing how good of people we are. So I think just seeing how everyone's hooped, doing everything like that, just definitely locks me in a little more for some of the games.
So with that being said, that quote, right? Comparison is a thief of joy. The ethos of that quote is like, I don't want to compare. Like, I want to focus on me. I just want to make sure that I'm doing well, that I'm okay. How did you do that in practice, though? Like, not, you know what I mean? Like, how did you apply that to your life where you weren't comparing yourself to others and really just focused on yourself?
I mean, at the end of the day, what's for you is for you. So when you're in practice like that, just working every single day, any day you can, you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. But as long as you can stack good days more than bad days, you're going to stack in a good direction. So just trying to get, even if it's 0.01% better every single day, that you're getting better. So just trying to work on that any way you can. And there's always space to get better. I mean, LeBron's 41, and he's probably getting better at things all the time, seeing the game differently, seeing things like that. So there's always a chance for you to get better. So not really comparing yourself to someone else or what someone else has, because social media era, people are only going to show the good things. Everyone has bads. You're not going to see that, though. You're not going to see that. You're not going to see when someone has a bad game, what happened in practice or a bad, something like that. You're just going to see all the good. So everyone looks great on social media. So really just keeping to yourself and not comparing yourself, because it'll drive you crazy if you're comparing yourself to something else. Because you see every single day on social media someone else is doing something crazy or this, that, and the third. You can think to yourself that you're not doing enough, but when you just focus on yourself and get better, it's all you really can do.
With to that point, right, you mentioned the social media world that we live in. Some people like to call it hyper-reality, right, where you can't really tell what's real or not because people just post what's good. A question that I'm kind of stealing Corey's thunder here, but a question that Corey loves to ask prospects all the time is, what's an underrated aspect of your game? Because you see a lot of highlight reels out there of your game. They probably just highlight whatever they want to highlight. But maybe sometimes for the casual fan, they're not getting the full scope of how dynamic of a basketball player that you are. What's one aspect of your skill set that you feel like gets slept on a little bit?
I think my memorization and like anticipation. I think just those two. Like seeing on the court, as games go on, I start realizing what their calls are, like for defense, what their calls are for their plays. You know, me and Chase did that really well. We would kind of tell the team a little bit, but I memorized a lot of those. So in just anticipating, you know, a lot of times Houston helped me with that a lot. You know, when you see a screen coming, anticipating that, or seeing what the point guard is doing, if it's good for a lob, that's how I got a lot of steals this year. So I think just those two things, you know, as the game goes on, you kind of see how bigs, like some bigs are a little more lazy, or they're going to call from a little farther back, and some bigs are super aggressive when they're in the game because of the minutes they play. So realizing who you're playing with, that's why you always, whenever someone's checking in, you got to know who's coming in the game, because a lot of players play differently. Some players are obviously better on defense, some players aren't, some players are more aggressive, some players aren't. So just realizing what each player is, and that's why I think film is so important, because when you can watch film on someone and know what they do, know their tendencies, it makes the game much easier.
You know, I interviewed Cedric Coward a couple of weeks ago, and that's what he told me too. The picking up on the tendencies is, you know, one of the most important things that he learned during his rookie season on guarding guys. And it's how, you know, on one night he got cooked by Shea, and then he played him a couple of weeks later, dialed in on his tendencies and was able to anticipate some things a little more often. So I think that there's wisdom in that. Now, obviously, we have the combine coming up, which is, you know, a really exciting time. You know, we'll all be in Chicago next week. What are some of the things that you've been working on that you know that you needed to get better at, that you're excited to show NBA teams next week?
I think just my stance. You know, I play really skinny and I play really tall, just because I think used to run track a lot, so I feel more comfortable playing tall. But, you know, playing a little lower and widening my base, especially on shots, you know, as the game goes on, you get fatigued. So having a wide base, it just keeps you in that same wide base every single time. We're talking about wide base, dribbling lower. Obviously, I don't think we're going to work on any, like, dribbling or anything like that, but just playing a little lower, everything like that. The athleticism part, I mean, you can work on the combine drills, but at some point, you can work on it to a certain extent, but sometimes it's just God-given talents. But I think definitely just shooting a lot. I've been shooting every single day, you know, two, three times a day for tons of shots, you know, working on it and just staying focused, you know, different pickups off the dribble, everything like that. So just working on your whole game, because it's a lot of things you can get better at.
Corey, you mentioned the combine, and along with all the testing stuff, you're going to be meeting with a lot of teams there, right? And you guys are going to be having different conversations. Something that I like to ask prospects all the time is, what is your why, right? What is the reason why this is important to you, the reason why you've fought tooth and nail to get to this point in your journey? Why is this important? Why does this matter? Why are you fighting to be in the position that you're in today?
Yeah, I think my family and just, you know, just people in San Antonio, you know, people I grew up with and the players that are on my team. I mean, just working hard for them, really, just show any of them they can do it. But obviously, I mean, for myself, obviously, too, you know, I want to be great in any way I can. I hate losing. So being great in this game of basketball, which I love the most. So just trying to do anything I can to just get better day by day. I mean, my sisters work. My dad works. My parents worked hard their whole life. So I'm going to follow in the same footsteps, obviously in a different path than them. But in any way, I think anyone should work hard in anything they pursue. So just trying to do that. And that's really my why. I think really my family and friends.
Now, you know, sticking with the theme of the combine, you're going to be sitting across NBA executives, and basketball is a business as much as it is a competitive sport for NBA teams. So we do a segment called Sell Me This Pen, typically on our show, where we try to give a quick 30-second, 1-minute elevator pitch on a prospect. If you were sitting across from an NBA team and they asked you, why should we invest in you? What would your response be?
I mean, you want to make your team better. If you want someone that's going to be an everyday guy, you know, you're not going to have any problems with me. Players are going to love playing with me. So you're not going to have anyone that doesn't want to play with me or leave because of that. And then obviously I'm going to get better every single year, every single day, because I'm not going to stay the same player I am when I first come into the league. Like 2-3 years down the road, I'm going to be a completely different player. So I'm going to continue to get better as much as I can. I'm not going to stay complacent. I say that.
Now, you have, obviously have a great team around you, from, you know, your representation to your network with the Cougars. But your brother, you know, went from playing college ball, interned for an NBA front office. Has he given you any insight into kind of what life looks like on that side, perspective, and what you might be able to expect?
Yeah, definitely seeing how some people just work, you know, the work that they put in, you know, good and bad. You know, there's some players that just, I mean, just the work they really put in, I'd say. You know, just continuously working on every little thing, every little detail, you know, whether it's their feet, whether it's their shot, how they are in practice, you know, just working on their own. Because when you get there, it's a business, like they say. They're not going to be on you every single day. It's your job. So really working like that and just seeing how players can last in the NBA so long. You tell me about that.
You're born and raised San Antonio, correct?
Well, born in Virginia, but raised in San Antonio. Yeah, raised
okay.
In
San Antonio. Newport News. San Antonio raised, getting to represent Houston. I know your mom has like Puerto Rican heritage as well. Talk to us a little bit about your identity, how, you know, being raised in San Antonio, how that's so important to you. Obviously, you guys run the For the City camp as well. Talk to us a little bit about where you're from and your upbringing has had an impact on who you are.
Yeah, definitely. I've been blessed. I mean, my parents worked 2 great jobs. You know, my life hasn't really been hard at all, I'd say. But a lot of people are different. You know, not everyone has this. So I think you should just be grateful for everything you have. So I have a lot of gifts and I have a lot of people in my life that help me in great ways. But a lot of people don't have that. So I think I can't take advantage of that. You know, tomorrow's not promised. So working every single day and anywhere I can just become better. And then obviously giving back. You know, I was obviously more fortunate than some people. That's just how life goes. So any way I can, if I can give back, if I can make their life a little easier on them, I'm going to do that for sure. Because God bless me. God bless them too. But God bless me to be able to bless other people.
Now, I am a born and bred New Yorker. Albert's from New York as well. So some might call me a little bit of a pizza connoisseur or a pizza snob, depending on the person. I heard you have a very specific pizza order.
Yeah, yeah. Cheese pizza with bacon on it. I get it every single time. I forgot exactly the day I tried it that changed. And I forgot. I think someone made me eat it. But since then, I've never. If they have cheese pizza around, obviously I'll have it. But I've never ordered a pizza that wasn't cheese with bacon.
Interesting.
Okay. All right. So For me, I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm Asian. So this next question's a really meaningful one for me. Erica told us that you're like super into like Pokemon and Naruto. I'm 36 years old. I never watched anime growing up, but about a year ago, my buddies at my where I used to work, they were like begging me. They're like, "Dude, you got to watch Naruto. Like, you're mm-hmm. Asian. What are you doing?" So I did it, and I watched all of it, and it took me like a month and a half. So this question is really important to me, and I need to ask you, you being a Naruto fan, give me your comp, man. Who's the guy, who's the character on the show that you resonate with the most that's impacted your life? I'm telling you, I'm 36. I watched it last year. It changed my life. Like, it had me changing how I thought about life and the difficulties that I've faced. So for you, which character do you feel like you resonated with the most?
I'd say my favorite character is Shikamaru. I mean... I think early on, especially, I don't know if people that watch this don't understand, but early on when Naruto was little, obviously no one in the village was messing with him. So Shikamaru was one of those ones. He always kept to himself, but, you know, not just judging anyone for just how, what other people think. So just trying to, just like Shikamaru, I think. I mean, obviously, he never wanted to, that's just my favorite character, I'd say Shikamaru for me, obviously, definitely.
That's such an important answer, though, because for our fans or our listeners who don't understand, Shikamaru is a genius, mm-hmm. and he's a very cerebral character. And I think you talking about your IQ, right, your passion for film, you're wanting to learn your opponents and their tendencies, that's literally Shikamaru. So that's such an incredible answer. Thank you so much for answering that one.
For sure. Hey, who's your player comp, you'd say, or your character comp?
Okay, so for me, I have a lot of pain in my life, which we can talk about later. so for me, it's Itachi. Like, I feel like, I've been through a lot. That pain has shaped me, but I care about my community, and I'm willing to die for my community.
Definitely. That's a good comp. That's a good comp. Okay. Definitely.
I feel very left out of this conversation.
It happens.
I'm going to have to step my game up and on this. I know for sure it was a popular ask when I was working in the DVD section at Best Buy back in the day. Bringing it back to Ball for a second, and you know we'll get you out of here. 10, 15 years from now, what do you want people to say about Kingston Fleming's career?
I mean, I'd say every single place I leave, I think I just want to leave a mark in a good way, in a good way. I mean, people leave... Some places go to other places and maybe they left a bad mark and they end up being good. But I think every place I leave, I don't want anyone in that organization to say that I had any bad or any faults, you know, anywhere I go. So I think I just want to be known like that. I don't want 15 years down the road, people saying maybe I was a good player, but they hated me as a teammate. You know, I want them to say I was a good player, love me as a teammate. I think I just want to be respected across the whole league. So definitely that.
Man, Kingston, this was a real pleasure. We are just incredibly excited to watch your journey through not only the rest of this pre-draft process, but your inevitably very long career in the NBA. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I mean, we know how busy these things are. You know, we've been traveling, hitting all these pre-draft camps up. So for you to take time, it truly means a lot, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me, for sure.